Hi, I'm Dr. Avanti Kumar Singh. In over 20 years of practicing both Western medicine and Eastern healing traditions, the most important thing that I've learned is that healing is a journey we take together. So on this podcast, I'll be demystifying Ayurveda and other integrated medicine, showing how these simple ancient practices are the keys to unlocking a healthy modern life. We are all healing catalysts because healing starts within. It starts with you, and it starts right now. This is a Soulfire production. Episode number 122. You know, it's alarming how we've all become part of this high-speed, always-on culture that is obsessed with productivity. Doing, doing, doing all the time, chasing our dreams and deadlines, often at the cost of our sleep. It's as if the night is just a pause in our activity, not the deep, restorative space that it's meant to be. And honestly, let's be real, how many of us are truly getting that peaceful, uninterrupted sleep we all crave and that we all need? Well, today we're going to unpack this together and talk about sleep. Hello, my beautiful friends. Welcome back to the Healing Catalyst podcast. I'm Avanti, and I am so happy to be here with you again this week. If you've been low on energy, your sleep is probably a piece of the puzzle. But if you're also wondering what else you can do to improve your energy, make sure you take my Energy Fix quiz, which will give you personalized recommendations from me on how to increase and improve your energy. It takes just a few minutes, and I've linked it in the show notes for you. Okay, so back to sleep, which we're talking about today. Today, I'm once again joined by Dr. Thanmeet Sethi, who many of you have heard on this podcast many times before, for a conversation about sleep. And so you all are going to get a chance to listen in on our conversation about the things that we're thinking about and hearing about from our patients and students, and even experiencing ourselves. This is a continuation of a series that we started last month called Ignite, because we know that these conversations will ignite you to think about things differently and then try doing things differently. And for those of you who don't already know her, Dr. Thanmeet Sethi is an integrative and psychedelic medicine physician, author, TEDx speaker, and activist who has dedicated her career to care for the most marginalized patients in Seattle's refugee, uninsured, and unhoused populations, as well as global communities traumatized by man-made and natural disasters as senior faculty for the Center of Mind-Body Medicine. Her first book, Joy is My Justice, Reclaim Yours Now, which was published in May of 2023, is a radical call to claim joy as our birthright, the deepest liberation we can know, and a path to power through oppression. She's a clinical associate professor at the University of Washington and a primary clinical investigator there on the sacred plant medicine psilocybin. In her clinical practice, she weaves modern and ancient medicine to catalyze the most profound healing in her patients. In our conversation, Dr. Thanmeet and I dive into the mechanics of sleep, why the different stages of sleep, non-REM and REM, are important for our physical, emotional, and mental health, and how light and our hormones affect sleep. We also discuss why sleep isn't just about the body, but also about our hearts and our minds, which also need their rest. We also share our perspectives on coffee and alcohol and sleep, and some strategies we often share with patients, as well as some of our personal favorites. You all are going to love this conversation, which has some eye-opening insights on the power of a good night's sleep. I am so excited to share with you this Ignite conversation with Dr. Thanmeet Sethi about the transformative power of sleep. Hello, Thanmeet. I am so excited to be back with you again to do another Ignite episode where we have a conversation.
I'm really excited. It feels like something I've been looking forward to.
Yeah, I know. I love this. The last one that we did last month on habits really was received really well. And so here we are again. And today we are going to talk about sleep. And I know we tossed around a lot of different topics and we kind of came to sleep because we thought, well, we're transitioning into a new season and sleep is so important as a habit too. So kind of continuing on that theme. So here we are. We're going to talk about sleep. So I'm excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're also just past the sleep change, the time change, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Which I think is, you know, again, it's kind of hard. That 1 hour time difference kind of screws up everything, especially our sleep. It's a big thing. So, okay. So we're going to jump into all things sleep. Let's talk about the problem and why we're talking about sleep. In 2023, there was a study done by the Sleep Foundation in which they said that 37% of US adults reported that their sleep quality worsened in 2023 compared to previous years, which I find incredible because I feel like more people are talking about sleep and how could it be any worse than in the pandemic? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, I wonder if it's the world, right?
Like, yeah.
I think the world was stressful that I wonder if no matter what we know, it's just so hard to settle our minds and our bodies. That's been true for me. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, we live in a tough world and stuff is tough. Like everything, just being human is tough, I think. So yeah, absolutely. It does affect your sleep. And, you know, the other report I looked at was a report done by the Sleep Organization something. I'll put the source in the show notes, but it's a report of the state of sleep in America from last year. And it says that it's estimated that 50 to 70 million Americans, which is roughly one third of the adult population, doesn't get the recommended amount of sleep, uninterrupted sleep, needed for optimal health on a regular basis. Like, this is a huge problem for a lot of us. It's not just
a lot.
Yeah, right? A third. And I feel like that number is probably even low. I don't even think that's actually accurate, right?
Probably.
Yeah. And then, you know, that report went on to say that, you know, the wide range of effects on our physical health, our mental health, you know, everything from increased risks of obesity, diabetes, heart disease, mood disorders, all of these things are affected by sleep and lack of sleep. And the other thing that it said is that, you know, it really has a, you know, significant variance by state, but also in certain racial and ethnic groups, it's a higher rate of these sleep disturbances. So it's a multi-level sort of issue that we're talking about.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And I love that we're talking about sleep because I feel like it is such a huge problem and it is something that may not be easy for most of us, mm-hmm. but it's free.
Yes.
And there's a lot of gadgets and, you know, bro talk around how to sleep. And I feel like it's nice to just go over kind of some simple, accessible ways to improve how this huge part of our health could be optimized.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Cause you know, it's much beyond the health trackers and stressing about like how good was your sleep and all this stuff. So, but you know, we'll get to that in a second. So let's go back now to the mechanics of sleep. Now that we know kind of what the problem is, the mechanics of sleep. So just for the listeners, just to explain, and I think the reason I really wanted to talk about this with Youth and Meath is because I think when you understand that there are these different stages of sleep, and what those stages of sleep do for us physically, it makes it much more understandable, like why sleep is so important beyond just getting rest, right? So there's two stages of sleep, non-REM sleep and then REM sleep. In non-REM sleep, you've got three stages. There's like this transition to sleep, which you're going from wakefulness to more sleep. And you're kind of like, everything starts to relax and slow down. Your breath, your heart rate, your eye movements, all of that kind of stuff. And then stage two of non-REM sleep is this sort of light sleep before you get into the deeper part. They say it lasts about 20 minutes and then everything slows down further. And then your body temperature starts to drop and your brain wave activity starts to sort of slow, even though there is, in a way, increased electrical activity, but it's slowing down. And then you have stage three of non-REM sleep, which is your deep sleep or slow wave sleep, which is, this is like the essential restorative sleep that you need so that you feel refreshed in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it lasts longer during the first half of the night because of hormone levels and everything. But this is like the time when there's that repair going on in your body, building of muscle and bone, strengthening of your immune system. So it's really important. It's that delta wave time. So that's why, you know, you need to get to that third stage of non-REM sleep. And then REM sleep is the dream stage. That's about 90 minutes after you fall asleep. And the REM sleep length will increase as the night progresses, with the longest period like right in the morning hours. And it's called REM because it's rapid eye movement. Your eyes are moving actually in all different directions. And the brain activity is sort of like it's being awake. That's when you're dreaming, even though your body's relaxed and immobilized. So you can't actually act out your dreams, but your brain is quite active. So those are the two stages. And then maybe we could talk about sort of why each of those is important. So why non-REM is important versus REM.
Yeah. So we'll start with the REM, I guess, since you just talked about it. So REM sleep is important because that's supposedly, and not supposed, science shows, but to understand how it's not only when we dream, it's when we consolidate memories and learning. Like when we, you know, I think about it for people who are trying to practice a presentation or they're in school, and how you're studying or practicing and then you sleep, and that REM sleep is actually how it gets cemented and really imprinted. And so that's super important for us to, it's also where there's a lot of work being done around that memory consolidation of it's how we really understand our memories as good or bad, harmful or good. And that data is emerging of how that happens. That I find that super fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then when we're in deep non-REM sleep, then that's where we're doing, as you said, the muscle bone growth and repair. It's where we're actually anti-inflammatory cytokines are being produced, and we're actually decreasing inflammation in our body. We're really cleaning up our body. You know, we're doing a little, what if you want to think of it as like a little detoxification. And it's super important for us, for our health. In fact, there's studies to show that if you don't get enough deep sleep, and how much higher your inflammatory environment in your body can be. So this is really important. And we talk about all these ways to decrease inflammation, but there's one that's right here that comes naturally. You know, not easily for everyone, but it's a natural part of our day, 24 hours. And so optimizing it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, because, you know, I think this is the thing. We always forget, like, everybody's so, like, worried about taking all these supplements and doing exercise.
Right.
I mean, and it's like sleep is right there. And it's such a big part of detoxification and boosting immunity and learning and all of these things. And we don't think about it enough. And I think, you know, that's also a function of the world that we live in, where we can have lights on 24 hours a day. And so there's like this idea that you can just be doing stuff all the time. You can be, quote, productive, falling into that productivity nonsense that we have, especially in the United States. People will give up their sleep. I think it's, yeah. So it's a great reminder, I think. And it was helpful for me to even like review the mechanics of sleep, you know, and think about that again. Like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's going on.
And something you just said, super important about that productivity, because actually in that deep sleep is where the ATP molecules, the energy molecules, are how we make energy. That's where we kind of clean up the byproducts of that and refuel to make more ATP the next day. And that's not important for people to like memorize or remember. What I think is important is to know that it is almost impossible to have enough energy to do all the things we want to do. I mean, we know that, but we don't.
Exactly.
We somehow think we can skimp on it, right? Like I can get through it.
Right.
But it's a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, and also, you know, building on what you're saying, there's also this, you know, another system that's sort of in the brain and the nervous system, which is the glymphatic system, which is kind of like that lymphatic system for your central nervous system, right? Where we're removing those waste products during sleep from the brain that are accumulating while we're awake. And it's really, really important. And this is, again, the glymphatic system is really active during sleep. So again, we need this time to clean up our brain so we can function better. Yeah. And it goes to that productivity thing. It's like, I've been saying this a lot, is that we use so many words interchangeably. So like productivity, a lot of people will think that means efficiency, and it's not the same thing because you could be, quote, productive in like just crossing things off of a list, but are you really efficiently doing it? And that's where I think like understanding how sleep is so important for your efficiency to be able to do things in an efficient manner so that you're not like just taking an hour to do something that might take 15 minutes. I think that makes a big difference, right?
It's huge. And you're making me think too, I mean, language is so important, right? That I think we know so much wisdom about sleep. I mean, you know, going back to that REM part where we have our memories and our learning, we also process our emotions around it, right? I was saying that. I think that we know that in our wisdom. So we'll say, you know, if you're really sad or angry about something, people will say, get a good night's sleep and let's talk about it in the morning. And that's actually not a bypass. It really matters. So if you're actually processing emotions and waking up with an understanding of where you are around it. And so I think people look at, I think what we're saying as a whole is that people look at sleep as a non-doing state.
Right.
And I think, yes, it is a restful state, but it's not a nothing state. It is a state of so much metabolism, of biochemical factors, of neurotransmitters, and of emotions and processing, you know, our thoughts and our learning. And so there is so much happening there that, you know, that's why you get so much activity in a sleep study. You can watch people's brains. And I think it's just this underestimation of the power.
Right. No, and mic drop, because what you just said is so good, that we look at sleep as a resting time, as a non-doing time, but actually there's so much happening. I think that's so good, the way you just described it, because it's so true. And if we look at it as more than rest, which of course rest is so important, but there's so much that's so important for our functioning, for our health, that's going on during that restful time. It's a doing time, actually, in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah. And you said it actually in the beginning, you said it's a repair state as well, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the, like, it's rest and repair.
Yes. Yeah. Super important. Okay. So the other thing I wanted to talk about is, before we get into some of the, you know, tactical things that we can talk about, like how to improve your sleep, is let's talk about one more thing as far as the mechanics go, which is the influence of light and hormones on sleep, you know, sort of the master hormones of melatonin and cortisol and how that affects us, our sleep. Do you want to dive into that, Thamith?
Yeah. So, I mean, we all know, right, that we have a rhythm, that we wake up with the sun and we, at some point, you know, and we go to bed in the dark, unless you're a night shift worker or in jet lag. And there's a reason for all that, right? When we get up in the morning, our cortisol levels are at their highest because that's what gets us up. It tells our body that it's time to get out of bed and to give us some energy to do that. In the morning, our melatonin levels are at their lowest because that also gives our body the signal like, this is over, now you can get up. But those are inversely proportional. So our cortisol is at the highest, our melatonin's at the lowest. And then those go into a pattern where, you can't see me, my fingers are moving, but they go into a pattern where the cortisol goes down through the day to the evening to get us to sleep, and the melatonin goes up through the day to the evening to make us also stimulated to sleep. But there's key things that make this cycle work. And so one is light. And light is super important. When you get up and have that morning light in your eyes, there's actually melanopsin receptors in our eyes that are stimulated. And those actually set off that stimulation of melatonin to slowly go up through the day. Also, when the dusk is coming and the light is waning, that also gives our body stimulation, that dusky light, for the cortisol to go down and the melatonin to finish coming up. And I think we are really focused on nighttime routines for sleep, and we should be. I think that's super important. You know, bringing the light down in the evening and winding down in your mind and your body. But we don't talk enough about the morning. And so just getting that morning light. And I think it's really hard. You know, people go from waking to doing work on a screen inside. Right. And, you know, it can take just 10 or 15 minutes if you can make it part of your morning to just be outside, even on a cloudy day. And so, you know, just understanding that, I think this just plays so much into what you're always talking about, which is, you know, in Ayurveda, we're really wanting people to understand how to be in line with nature. And we weren't meant to just be inside all day or in the morning, especially. Right. Right.
Yeah. I think that you're bringing up a great point, which is that actually good sleep hygiene starts in the morning, which is so, like, you know, like backwards to think about sometimes, because you're like, oh, I need to get ready in the evening. But it actually starts in the morning with what you're doing. And we'll talk about some of those habits and things that you can institute to help you get better sleep and help to, you know, reduce your sleep disturbance, et cetera. But it really does start in the morning, good sleep hygiene.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that's super important. And again, also, you know, back to your point about this morning sun viewing, right? Of really making sure that you get 10 to 15 minutes of, you know, natural sunlight into your eyes, not through a window, not through sunglasses. Try and go outside. You know, you get a little walk in, you get sort of, you know, double benefits of some prana moving through you, some energy, getting a little bit of exercise and movement, and also getting that sunlight into your eyes. It's just good for your health all around. So I think those are important.
And I have to say, like, for anyone listening, I find this really challenging. I just want you to know, I'm saying this, but I find it challenging. Yeah. I will get up and I have like a way that I do my morning almost every morning. Sometimes I slip from it, but where I'm trying to be off a screen and be in what I call analog time and all that. But getting outside is actually another step that actually I find hard, you know, because it just, maybe I'm not ready to take a walk, or then I've got a work day that's really busy and I just start funneling into it after I do my morning and get showered and ready. And so I just want to extend some compassion to people. Like, this is not easy. I would say that my husband has it down, this part, and I watch him and I just think, oh, that's how you do it, is that he just has a habit and he just does it where he takes his coffee outside on one of our decks and he sits there and drinks it and meditates. And he'll make sure his eyes are open for, you know, part of that time. And I'm not sure why, but it's a harder leap for me to do that. And so I'm just saying, like, some people have it kind of wired into the routine and others like me are still trying to figure out, you know, because I get a morning walk most of the time,
right,
but it's not always in that most important hour after I wake up. And so I am still, you know, working through this is what I would say.
No, I agree. I agree. It's hard because, like, I mean, I think, again, you know, you can extend some compassion to yourself and, you know, do baby steps. Like, make sure that you do get outside in the morning time sometime before lunch, you know, before noon, you know, put a time on it. And then maybe from there, then you go to, okay, I'm going to try now to move it earlier in the day, earlier in the morning, maybe within 90 minutes of getting up. And then maybe it's, you know, within an hour of getting up or whatever. So you kind of slowly creep towards the habit that you want. And then we've talked about this in habits, you know, the whole idea of habit stacking and linking. I think that's what Steve is doing, your husband.
Yes.
He's linking his morning coffee and some meditation to that morning sunlight viewing. So he's like kind of grouped them together. So it happens. It's much more likely that it happens, which I think is great.
Yeah. I blame him that he's taken the spot, you know, but that's really not a good reason. I really need to figure it out. But this... And I think that I can feel the difference, Avanti, when I don't do it, because I can feel the impact of the artificial light all day that, you know, and I don't have fluorescent bulbs, which a lot of offices have. And, but I can feel that sort of, I feel like stuffy, like I haven't gotten that fresh light, just like fresh air. I think about fresh light.
Yeah. That's,
and so I can feel the difference.
Yeah. No, I like that fresh light. That's a good way of putting it. Some fresh light in the,
yeah,
morning.
I just thought of that. I never thought of it that way, but I feel like that's really important. I'm feeling it.
Yeah. I've never heard it said that way. I like that. I really like that. I'm going to keep that. Thank you for that. Okay. Yeah, so we've talked about some of the mechanics. So now let's move into something that you actually brought up when we were preparing for this episode, which was, you know, we all focus on this physical aspect, and you kind of alluded to this already. We think about the physical aspect of sleep, of getting that rest, getting into bed, the whole, like all the things that we do around getting into bed. But you had a really great point, which was, what about putting our minds and our hearts to sleep? And I really was struck by that. Tell me what you were kind of getting at that. I think that's really intriguing and important. So what are you saying?
Yeah,
there?
I mean, I think, you know, in all transparency, the reason I think of it like this is because I'm one of those people who, until now, until menopause, did not have problems with sleep. You know, we can talk about that in a different episode. It's a whole nother, midlife sleep is a whole nother issue. But I, until this time in my life, literally, you know, like sleep is my friend. You know, I just get in bed. It drives my husband crazy because he has a hard time, but I get in bed and I'm asleep. But my body sleeps easily, but my mind and heart have never slept easily. And so my body is ready to sleep, but sometimes my mind and heart just take over. And I'm one of those people who, you know, maybe people listening can resonate. I can just play back the day. I can really get caught up in the hard parts of the day and the negative parts of the day. And so I really had to start thinking of it like this, where I would go to bed and think, okay, my body feels tired, but what about my mind and heart? How can I let those wind down to go to sleep? And for me, it had to become a ritual and a practice. And I have different ways I do that, which I'm happy to talk about. But it feels really important because, and I feel like most of my patients tell me their mind's racing at night or they're stressed out. And for anyone who has been up in the middle of the night, especially my favorite example is nursing young children, newborns. If you're up in the middle of the night, the most catastrophic things happen in your mind. Like it just is scary, you know, like, is this baby okay? Am I okay? I mean, things just start going through your mind. So it's really important to understand how to put your mind and heart to sleep. And also if they wake up too early, how to put them back to sleep.
Right. Yeah.
So I think of it that way.
Yeah, no, and I think that, you know, you're getting to a really good point, which is also that I think many of us think that our sleep will be fine because our bodies are physically tired, but it's really the mind and the emotions that I think, that's what I hear the most from other people that I'm talking to, whether students or patients, or even for myself. It's the mind and the heart going to sleep that is actually keeping me awake or keeping people awake or disturbing their sleep, right? And, you know, even like your example of, you know, nursing young children, but this is happening in midlife too. You know, I'm in menopause too. And like, I wake up in the middle of the night and then all of a sudden, all the thoughts come racing in because I'm first like, why am I awake? Why can't I sleep? And then all my mind just keeps going. And there you are. It's like 2 hours later and I'm still awake. So yeah. I think the mind heart piece is really important. So what do we do? Tell us some things that you've done that have worked for you.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's really good evidence. We'll start there with things like progressive muscle relaxation and yoga nidra. Both of those have actually data behind them to show that they help people get their sleep latency to decrease the amount of time it takes to go to sleep. And even with yoga nidra, I believe the studies even show improved deep sleep. But I think that those kinds of practices, if people want it, you can easily Google on YouTube, you know, exercises, or I like Insight Timer has good yoga nidra guided exercises and progressive muscle relaxation. Both of those are really helpful. I also actually just developed not developed. I don't own any of these. What I mean is I decided to create for myself age-old wise imageries that are used. I didn't make it, but I try to sometimes, if I really feel my mind and heart racing, then I try to put the worries to sleep. So I actually go through a little bit of a guided imagination exercise in my mind where I think about all the things I'm worrying about. And I imagine I'm writing them out on some beautiful paper with a very nice pen. And then I fold them up and put them in a beautiful box. And I say, you know, that you're here for me tomorrow, but right now I must go to sleep. And it helps me because once I fold each of those and put them in, it allows me to understand that I'm not saying they're not important, or I'm not saying that they don't need my attention. They're usually things that do need my attention. Sometimes they're not, but mostly they are. And this way allows me to acknowledge that, but to say, you'll be here later, but I really need to go to sleep, you know, and so for my health, and so, and to process it all. So that's one thing I do a lot, but I mean, those other exercises are beautiful ways also to relax. And then I would just add some simple deep breathing, right? I mean, I know it's not always easy for people, but it is a simple exercise to breathe into your belly and exhale out so that your belly's rising as you breathe in and falling in as you breathe out. And doing that is not only good for your nervous system and your health, but it's very good for getting yourself relaxed to sleep.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So let me go back.
How about you?
I do some of those things, but let me go back to asking you a question to clarify. So when you're putting the worries to sleep, and are you actually physically writing those, or is that like imagery you're doing?
Oh, in my mind.
In your mind.
But yes, mostly because I'm in the dark and, you know, my husband's in the bed.
Yeah.
But I will say that I have counseled patients to have a journal next to their bed if they need to, and to actually write them down. And some people like that better than imagining it. So I tend to imagine it, but you can definitely just write them actually down.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to
thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah. Yes. I wasn't sure if you said that you were imagining it or if you were actually doing it. And so I think to your point, you can do either. I've found that putting a little notebook next to my bed helps me. Mm-hmm. So especially in midlife when I'm waking up in the middle of the night and then I see myself going down that, like, that spiral of, like, just, you know, my mind going, you know, spiraling. I have a notebook and I just write things down so that I don't feel like I'm going to forget something or, you know, whatever. It's silly things, but, you know, it just helps me to write it down. And sometimes that makes me sleepy just trying to do that.
Yeah. Well, and I like what you're saying about, you know, I haven't thought about this until you said it now, but I've counseled patients to write those things down. But I think what you do, keeping the notebook by your bed, no matter what, I love that, because then what can happen is you think, I just thought of this to do. Let me go put it in my phone. And then you're down a rabbit
hole.
Then
you're in trouble.
So I love this, like, just a notebook by your phone, by your bed, no matter what. Like, even if you don't want to do this exercise, it's just a way to keep you off an electronic device.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the other one, just as we're talking about electronic devices, I'll just go there. We have instituted in our house, it's like we put our phones to bed outside our bedroom. Mm-hmm. So the chargers are outside mm-hmm. of the bedroom and the door closes so that, like, you literally would have to get out of bed to go and yes. look at your phone. Which I will tell you, I am so lazy once I'm in bed and I'm warm and cuddly, I'm not going to get out of bed. If my phone happens to be next to me on the nightstand, it's done. Because if I wake up and I know that the phone is there and I see it, I'm scrolling. Like, you know, again, I'm yeah. like, we're not perfect. These are challenges that we have as, you know, health providers, as physicians, that everybody has, and probably why we're talking yes. about it too. So I have found the notebook to be helpful, and then parking those digital devices outside of our room. That's really helpful.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Okay. So you were saying also yoga nidra and some progressive muscle relaxation. Maybe what we'll do is we'll link a couple of resources in the show notes for okay. all of you who are listening, in case you want some guidance of, you know, some favorites that we each have. We'll put those in the show notes for you. What are some other ways that you process emotions and experiences from the day? What are some mm-hmm. other good techniques that you have?
Yeah, I mean, I think my best one is to breathe through them. But my husband and I do a little gratitude practice before sleep, and we just give each other a gratitude for something that we're grateful the other person did that day. And literally, you know, it's something like, you know, I'm grateful you made my coffee, or, you know, I'm good. And it's just a way to kind of come back to the good in the day so that our minds are kind of moving in that direction more so that we're not racing into a spiral. I find that super helpful for myself. And then I used to journal, you know, in the evening, but I don't do that anymore. But I think a lot of people find that really helpful. I've not been doing that. It's not a habit that feels like I have accessible to me right now, but I think that can be super helpful if people yeah. want to do that.
Yeah, I've used the 5-minute journal. I've talked about it on this podcast before. It's just a lovely little thing. It's, you know, got couple, like a page and a few questions for the morning, and then a page with some questions for the evening. And it has gratitude and sort of what happened during that day. So it's like a little guided journal, and it literally takes like a couple of minutes. And that's a nice way to just have that next to your bed and then do that as part of your exercise so that you can get some of that stuff out of your head. I found that I was writing a lot more at night. And so I started doing this extra, you know, notebook next to me and just writing more. You know, I think that again, like writing things out and sort of like brain dumping the stuff that is going on in your mind can really help. And then I also think that, you know, putting a piece in there where you're also sort of acknowledging the emotions that you have, like what's on your heart, that's also helpful. I found that really helpful, especially last year through that breast cancer journey. I had a lot of emotions on my heart. More so than even in my mind, there was just so much to process. So I actually started like drawing a heart and just like, you know, writing out sort of things that were on my heart. And that helped me at times, not always, but it did help me, you know.
I like that.
Yeah. So that was one of the things I do. So let me ask you this, you know, with emotions and sort of like what's happening on your heart, how do you say that people can sort of help to check in on their emotions throughout the day? Because we were talking about how, you know, the best sleep hygiene starts actually in the morning. And I think for so many of us, we have all these things that are happening all day long, and we rarely take any time to just stop for a moment and process it or you know, acknowledge it even. And so by the time we get to the evening, it's just like all sitting there, like, cause you haven't even taken a moment to get rid of it as you go. It's like all the stuff is just like piling on. What are some things that you might suggest for that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that in the morning, I like to check in with myself and see where I am. So just to start the day. To me, it's an act of resilience to really check in with myself and see what I need and where I am. Now, everybody has different ways that this works for them. For me, the most common ways I do are in a meditative exercise. And there's three main ways for me: a meditative exercise, reading some poetry, and or this one will surprise you maybe, I often will pull a tarot card.
Ah, so really? That's awesome.
Yeah. But because it's just a reflective exercise. And so I love them. They're tactile. They're beautiful. I have many decks because I'm kind of obsessed with them. And I'll pull one and then just see what it evokes in me in terms of emotions. But those three ways for the very first part of the morning, I actually, in later in the morning, or like I said, later in the later morning or day, when I do get to my walk, that's a big way that I check in with myself. Movement is one of my best ways. So those are the ways I check in that first part of the day. But I think that for many people, that kind of guided journal that you talked about, the 5-minute journal, is a nice thing in the morning too, of starting out, or morning pages from Julia Cameron, which many people do, from The Artist's Way, some kind of writing or free writing exercise where you get things out in the morning. And then I feel like going, well, let's stop there because I was going to say something about the rest of the day, but what do you think about the morning?
Yeah, no, I think that those are really, really important. The getting things out of your head, like that's a theme for me in the evening and the morning throughout the day, like just like emptying all of those swirling thoughts that are in my mind, but then also the things that are on my heart. And I think just getting, you know, just becoming aware that it's not just what's in your mind, but it's also what's on your heart. So checking in with your emotions and not just what's swirling in your brain. That was a really important sort of realization that I had, especially last year, was to really focus in on the emotions. So that's one. Another one, and I think we're going to get to this, is coffee. Like thinking about limiting coffee. Now, I know this isn't exactly emotions and mind, but I do think it plays into that because if you have too much caffeine, it can make you more anxious and it can make your mind race more. And so I do think that really limiting caffeine and sort of being very particular about when you will have it and when you won't is important. So like for me, some of the things that I really have gotten in the habit of is making sure that I wait like 90 minutes after waking up to have my first cup of coffee because of the whole adenosine receptors and, you know, the adenosine clears. And so then your caffeine can, you know, attach to those receptors. So you actually get a bigger bang for your buck for having that coffee. But then I also make sure I limit the coffee and I don't have anything after, like most days after 11, but some days after 1. So I don't know what you do with caffeine.
Yeah, well, this is what I do. I don't have it anymore.
Really?
Oh my, yeah.
How are you doing that? Well, can't even imagine. Oh my gosh.
The reason I don't, Avanti, is because of what you just said. Mm-hmm. It was making me anxious. And so I could start to feel, just a little backstory, I'm not one of those people who drank coffee their whole lives. Right. In fact, I went through med school, residency, 3 children, nursing, delivering babies for 20 years, and no coffee.
Really? Wow.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Coffee was not my thing. And it wasn't because I know I'm sensitive to it. And so I never knew when I could get sleep on labor and delivery call or, you know, and so I didn't want to interfere. So I just didn't drink coffee. I maybe had 1 cup a month just as a fun thing in an afternoon because I loved the taste, but I didn't drink it really. And then fast forward the last sort of 5 years, I don't know why I didn't use it before, but now I've been drinking coffee every day and I just love the taste. I love the smell. So it became more of a ritual. But slowly but surely, I realized that I was kind of on edge. Mm. And I think at first I was attributing it to the world and the pandemic. And, you know, there are many things to be on edge about.
For sure.
But I was realizing like, no, Thanmeet, you're on edge. I mean, you're anxious and it's not your normal, you know. So I had to take it out to see and I did. And it's the caffeine.
Wow. I don't even know if I could do that.
I'm a living testament to eliminating caffeine.
Wow.
I had to find a new ritual in the morning because that was really important to me. And it took me a while. I tried every drink made now to get you off coffee and none of them were really working. I finally found one that I love. And so that's what I'm doing every morning. Instead, it's a warm cup of fresh cacao, like real pure cacao. And it's really good. And I feel like it has that same warm, earthy taste, but yeah, no more caffeine for me.
Wow. I'm impressed. I don't know that I could do that. Well, I mean, I guess I've done that. And I actually, you know, to your point, I never had coffee till I got to medical school, never before that. So, and even in medical school, I didn't drink it that much. So I was not a coffee drinker either. It wasn't until I think after I had kids that I started having it every now and then. And then it became a ritual and it was a really nice thing. And next thing I knew, it was a habit. But it's interesting because I can go like every other day and sometimes not have it. So I'm not like completely addicted. I don't even know if that's true. I am addicted. I mean, it's either or not.
And I think, but I think what's important is what you're saying is this awareness, right? Because just for anyone listening, I think coffee has amazing medicinal benefits. So I'm not saying that everyone needs to be off coffee. In fact, I miss it. I really do. But I do think it matters that you're aware to your tolerance and your needs. And even when I did drink coffee, if I drank it after say 10:30, 11 in the morning, I had trouble sleeping. And so I knew I was sensitive. So you do have to find your sort of, you can't just assume that you are all immortal with coffee, that you can do whatever you want. I mean, it lasts in people's systems, in a normal system, for 12 hours, if we want to count. But I have a genetic polymorphism that makes it last much longer. And so I can't have strong coffee. I can't have, so even now, if I accidentally have a little caffeine, I have to watch myself. If I accidentally got coffee that had caffeine, it's because now I'll have a decaf coffee in the mm-hmm. afternoon. And if it's accidentally not decaf, I have to throw it out
yeah.
because there's no way I'll make it through the night.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I think you bring up some good points, which is, you know, all of us metabolize coffee at different rates. And so this is a very individual thing. You know, we're sharing our individual experiences. And again, I think the point here is that if you're having trouble sleeping, look at your coffee consumption, look at your caffeine consumption in whatever form you're having it, even in tea, right? And what time are you having it? How much are you having it? How late in the day? Because that can all be affecting your sleep. And it's a simple thing that you could just, you know, reduce or, you know, limit in some way that will make your sleep much better. So that was that whole thing.
And be honest with yourself. If you're really anxious at night, I would try an elimination of coffee as well, just for the anxiety, even if you feel like you're sleeping well after that. You know, it does make people more anxious. Yeah. I'm living testament.
Yeah, it does. Okay, so now you were asking me about things that I do in the daytime. So that was one of the things I do for sleep hygiene. What are some of the other things that you do for sleep hygiene later in the day? Because I know everyone listening is probably really curious because, again, they want, you know, some remedies, some tactics, some strategies to help their sleep.
Yeah. Well, I try to have a regular exercise routine in the daytime, not at night, because that kind of revs me up. For most people, exercising before bed is not helpful for sleep, but some people it is. So you really have to find your individual needs. For me, it's not. So I do it in the day. But that movement and getting enough steps in the day, I try to get 8,000 a day, and then getting to the gym, that helps me sleep better. And I can feel it if I, for any reason, travel or otherwise miss a couple of days, my sleep, I can feel the difference. So that's a big one. The other thing is that I find that emotion check-in, what helps to dampen the nighttime racing is to actually name emotions as I go through the day. So you're not really processing and managing all of them necessarily, but there's neuroscience to show that if you name them as they're coming up, that actually allows the amygdala in your midbrain to dampen its threat signals, and it allows you to be more in your frontal cortex and engaged. And so you're less in this fight or flight mode. So meaning, you know, if I'm really having a hard day with sadness or anger or frustration, I'll just through the day also be naming it frustration, anger, whatever it is, and letting my amygdala kind of calm down. So that's a big one for me.
So that is so counterintuitive, because I would almost feel like if it was one of these emotions that we think of as quote negative, even though there's no such thing, right? All emotions are helpful. They're telling us something. But, you know, something like frustration or anger or sadness, I would think that naming it and sort of like recognizing it and saying hello to it would almost like send you into a place of like more anxiety of like, why am I feeling frustrated? Why am I feeling angry? Why am I feeling sad? And like that would go on throughout the day. Is that not what happened? I mean,
right. No, you would think so. But what the science shows is that it actually, the more you suppress the emotions, the more your body's physiology is activated. And so not only that, they've showed that, this is just a little aside, that you also activate other people's physiology. They can tell that your unsettledness makes them unsettled. And so, no, I mean, it actually does matter to name them. And you can do, as easy as I'm saying, just name, you could even imagine them. You could name them and put them in a bubble and imagine them blowing away or in a cloud float away. And just whatever, it's not saying that you don't have them. It's just saying, here you are. I think of it as the same way as if you look something straight in the eye, a person who's threatening or an emotion, it loses power. And so it loses the power over your threat center is how it works.
I love how you describe that. That's really helpful.
Yeah. I just do it kind of in many ways, right? Mm-hmm. Through the day. And it's almost like I'm saying, sadness, I see you. I got you. You're there. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll get to you when I'm in therapy or whatever. You know, like I don't have time for you right now.
Right.
But it feels hard. But if I name you, you have less power. Yeah. I see you.
Yeah.
You're not this thing that's taken me over.
Right. And it's not this constant threat of like sneaking up behind me. I see you. You're not like hidden in the bushes type of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. That makes sense to me. Although again, counterintuitive. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably a really good technique. Some of the other ones that I think we should talk about is probably seasonal adjustments. We've talked a little bit about it, but you know, again, with light and hormones that, you know, just realizing as the days get longer and the time changes, you want to sync up with the path of the sun. So kind of follow that as your rule. You know, it's an easy way to sort of adjust. When the sun is going to sleep, you go to sleep. When the sun's waking up, you wake up, you know, like within reason, but that's a good gauge, yeah. Right? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But I'd love to hear, actually, I would love to hear your tips on this mm-hmm. because I feel like I've gotten really good at syncing up with winter season. So there used to be a time where I got really depressed because of the darkness. And now I've really come to like really appreciate a time to hibernate and pull back and to recharge. So what I'm going to ask you is, the summertime is actually, you know, it's my favorite season. I'm a summer loving girl, but it can be hard for me sometimes because where I live, it's daylight till 10. And then, you know, the sun rises very early. And so if I really just went to sleep with the sun and woke up with the sun, I wouldn't get enough sleep. And so, but I understand that you can't, you know, you need to adjust, but it's hard for me when it's so sunny and warm. My energy is all outward.
Yeah, yeah.
So what are the things you tell people sort of Ayurvedically to mm-hmm. do to kind of also help balance? It's almost like it feels like a very activated state.
Yes, and it is. And it is. And I think the point here, so I'll start with this is a very good question. People ask this all the time. The first thing to remember is that if you sync with nature, you're going to have these natural fluctuations throughout the year. So we're not saying that like throughout the year, you're going to be up till 10 o'clock at night and waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning, right? So it's a seasonal thing. So your body can handle it better. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that I usually just put into sort of like, you know, kind of a subconscious rule is that like I try to get into bed no matter what time of the year it is, by 9:30 p.m. latest. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if the sun mm-hmm. is out or not. I just try and stick to that bedtime. And then I really do more adjustment with my morning time routine, like sort of like when I'm waking up and I wake up with the sun. I find it very difficult to wake up when the sun is not out, when it's dark. I find that really challenging. So that's my second suggestion. And then the third is, you know, sort of like lean into that energy. I think that, you know, having that energy of summer of, you know, it's outward, it's energetic, you're out with people, you're doing things outside, like enjoy it and don't stress out about it. But again, if you have sort of that, like, you know, top sort of like that, that time that you're not going to go past of being outdoors and, you know, social and most nights anyway, of 9:30, I think that can keep you in check. That's like the simple answer from my perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's helpful. I think, you know, I can find myself just wanting to do so much more.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And I think that, you know, again, leaning into that, you know, it was interesting. This is bringing up a conversation I had with someone in Iceland when I went a year and a half ago. And we were talking to them because we were in Iceland in December. Okay.
And
so, yeah. I mean, they had just a couple hours of daylight. Like, I mean, the sun was setting at 3:30, you know, literally, and not coming up till 11:30. It was really interesting. And so we were talking to a lot of the locals and saying, like, how do you deal with this? Because this is extreme of that seasonal affective stuff going on for us, you know, here in the Northern Hemisphere. Like, they have the extreme. And the answer was, is we just adjust with the time of year. We just accept that that's the way it is. And we lean into it. And so, you know, in the summer, when we have like basically, you know, 20 hours of daylight, we just lean into it and we do lots of stuff. And then, I mean, and again, they have extremes, right? So they can do this. Yeah. And then when the days are shorter, they just lean into that and they're indoors more and they go to sleep more. And, you know, so I think it's a nice message of like, just kind of lean into it and be okay with it. It doesn't have to be that strict, but you know,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's seasonal. And then bedtime routines, because we've talked about some of the daytime stuff. What are some of your bedtime routines to help improve sleep?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I try to actually turn off some lights, and sometimes we can just have candles as well. Not totally in the dark, but I'm just saying some soft light or softer light. And then, you know, just that sort of wind down of like slowing down. And, you know, I'm not sure. There was a recent study I just heard that on blue light, that it wasn't as impactful on sleep as we think, you know, from the screens. I think that that's probably true. I think it's what we're doing on the screens that I think is impactful. And so trying not to be scrolling or, you know, on work stuff, you know, in that last hour or two before bed. And then I really try to not eat late. This is a huge one for me. You know, is that the latest I like to be done with dinner is 7. And even if I a little later, earlier is better for me. But if you eat too late, I try to keep at least 3 hours in between bed and dinner. It's really hard for your body and to understand that it's time to rest, because it's literally in go mode, metabolizing mode. And so it's very hard to get good deep sleep. And so, not to mention it's inflammatory because your insulin's going, and you know, there's all kinds of ramifications. But I would really try not to, and I do not snack after dinner. And it's a hard and fast rule for me. Mm-hmm. So I just don't do it.
Yeah. No, I would agree that the food is a big one. Like eating early, that is, and again, like the caffeine, you know, again, we all sort of sometimes make things more difficult than we need to. And like these simple things, if we could just like sort of look at those and say, oh yeah, you know, I'm eating really late. I'm eating these really hard to digest meals at nighttime. It's really heavy. My body's having to work really hard before it goes to sleep. And so it doesn't know that it should be asleep and not working on digesting, you know, or metabolizing, right? So I think that that's such a good point, is that, you know, really think about what time you're eating your last meal, make it early, you know, before 7, absolutely. I try to do by 6:30. So it's 3 hours before I go to bed, with 9:30 is my sort of cutoff time of the day. I think that that's a really, really important thing. So those are some of the body things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the other one is, you know, really just being careful with, like you said, you know, you've cut off caffeine, but you know, you have to be careful with alcohol.
Yeah, for sure.
It disrupts your sleep. No way around it. It may feel like it gets you sleepier. It kind of does. It increases GABA in the beginning, but it will disrupt your sleep after that. And so the architecture of your sleep just cannot be solid with alcohol. And so, you know, you got to find your limits. If you're a person who likes to have a glass of wine with dinner, then maybe, you know, just kind of test how much is too much for you. But there is no sort of minimum good amount,
right?
You know, sorry to say.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's kind of something everyone has to find for themselves, a sort of balance between what you enjoy and what you need out of your sleep.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it comes back to sort of what we were talking about before, which is just becoming aware of how things affect you and the choices you're making. There's no good or bad, you know? I mean, the science is what the science is, right? That, you know, alcohol, no matter how much or how little you have, will disrupt your sleep. That is just the data. That's the truth.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, we make we make choices of, you know, how it affects us and what we're willing to do and not do and the effects of knowing what the effects will be. So like, you know, if I have any kind of alcohol, I know that it's not going to make me feel good. I really abstain a lot from it. I don't have it much, but that doesn't mean that that's, you know, good or bad. I just know the effects of what will happen to me the next day. And it's just not worth it to me. So again, there's just that awareness. Yeah. And then there are times when, you know, I'm with all my friends and I want to have a glass of wine and I know, well, I'm going to have kind of shitty sleep tonight, but that's okay. I, you know, enjoyed a glass of wine to celebrate something with my friends. So, you know, that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, exactly. So. And then the other thing that I find, I don't know if this happens for you, is that, you know, there is this sort of, with the circadian rhythm, a natural inclination to feel sleepy after dusk. Mm-hmm. And I find that if I really tune into my body and I know when I'm feeling sleepy, you know how you can override it, like, but, you know, I'll just stay up a little longer. I will get that quote unquote second wind and it will be very hard to go to sleep. And so I try to listen to my body's signals when it says it's you're tired. I try to say, okay, it's time to go to bed. Even if it's like, okay, it's only 8 o'clock and I could hang out or I could whatever, you know, I just try to listen to my body. And so I find it much harder to fight against it later.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. Again, it's like listening to those cues. And again, it's that's the whole point of, you know, this whole podcast is to, you know, how do you start to tune in to what your body is telling you, what your mind is telling you, what your heart is telling you, and, you know, reconnect with that, because we have so much information that we're getting all day long. And so if our body is saying, yeah, I'm tired, rather than ignoring it and overriding it, just go with it. And I think that that's important, because I agree. Anytime that I've tried to, that I override it, I have the worst time getting to sleep than later. It's like, it's done. I don't even understand. Sometimes it's like, wait, but I was sleeping an hour ago and now I'm not.
I know.
What? Wait, what? How did that happen? But literally you get a second wind and then you're like, God, I missed it, you know? So
exactly.
Yeah, I think.
And important. Then, you know, I think if anyone's listening, who's feeling like, oh, you know, but I don't want to deprive myself of caffeine or alcohol or a movie on Netflix or whatever. First of all, you don't, it's a fine line. You have to balance. You do some things sometimes, and like Avanti said. But here's what I would say too is, and this goes back to actually our habit podcast last month, is that when I do deprive myself, first of all, I don't think of it as depriving. I think of it as an act of self-love. You know, and so when I decide to say no to that glass of wine and or that glass of coffee in the morning or whatever it is, if I have a moment where I think, God, I wish I could do that, and I decide I don't want to, that's the important part. If you decide to, then do that with love too. But when I decide not to have it, I think of it as an act of love for myself, that I am taking care and tending to myself. And so, you know, I would just shift how we talk about these things, if anyone's listening, of, you know, from deprivation to loving care. And sleep in of itself is the epitome of loving care. And so, like, having to go to bed early is an act of love. You know, having to finish your food early is an act of love. You know, so I would just say, you know, decide what you need for yourself in any given day between where you are with needs and wants, cravings, joy, and whatever. But none of it is deprivation, mm-hmm. ever.
Right. It's choices. It's choices with awareness, really. You know, back to what Ayurveda is about, which is living in harmony with nature, but also living with conscious awareness of why you're doing what you're doing and why you're not doing what you're not doing. It's really that simple. Yes. And there's no judgment. Again, it's just about being aware and then saying, okay, that's what I decided. So now I'll go forward from here. So I don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, that kind of feels like a good place to maybe stop our conversation, because we could just keep talking for hours, but... I think we got to most of everything we wanted to talk about with sleep, you know, the mechanics and mind and heart, body, and then some practices. So I hope that for all of you listening, this was helpful. It was always so much fun, as usual, to talk to you, Thanit. Thank you so much.
It's always nourishing. I hope that I hope that people can just come away with just sort of an importance of sleep is an important part of the entire day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And sleep is a, like you've said before, it's an act of resistance of like saying that we need to rest. It's important. So.
Mm-hmm. It is.
All right. I'll see you next month, my dear. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Thanks again for listening to The Healing Catalyst. If you love what you heard, please hit follow and pass it along to a friend. And if you're feeling really inspired, please rate and review so that others can find this podcast more easily. To learn more, head to avantikumarsingh.com. And to connect with me directly, find me on Instagram at avantikumarsingh. I'll be back next week and hope that you will be too. Until then, remember, with the right catalyst, you have the power to activate your own healing, because healing starts within.